to Bedlington during your tour. You mentioned the fact that you had a rifle, Bedlington obviously, and you'd done training on mortars. Were there any other weapons that you were introduced to in 1938-39?
39? The Brent would come in. And
yes, I think you've mentioned that actually. You've got the Brent, yes.
And then they had the anti-tank gun.
Now, what was it like?
Well, it was like a large rifle. Just had a larger, like a rifle cartridge. Quite like a rifle.
This would be the boys' anti-tank rifle, I think.
It was.
What was it like to fire?
Oh, it wasn't too bad to fire, but it wasn't too effective as a weapon. It wasn't much use against tanks.
It's much longer than a rifle, isn't it?
Yes.
It looks like a long rifle.
It does. You lie down and fire it. You know. Now, I don't think it wasn't thought it was very effective against tanks at all.
Were the 2-inch mortars coming into the unit? The smaller.
No, we never saw them.
You didn't have them either?
No. They must have been later.
Hand grenades, were you introduced to those at all?
Oh, yes. We had hand grenades, yeah. Showing them. It was mostly drilled without unarmed hand grenades, sort of thing. Just how to fire them and things like that.
How did you throw a hand grenade?
Oh, just like overhand, like, you know.
Even like a cricket bowler?
Cricket bowler, more or less, yeah.
It wasn't just throwing it the way you might throw a stone, for example.
Oh, no.
And being trained with what we've also mentioned.
Yes, sacks. You know, sacks full of sand or straw or anything like that.
And did the teacher just scream as you went in?
Oh, yes, he had to shout, yes.
PT, that kind of the sporting side of territorial life, did you get involved with that at all?
Well, there wasn't any PT on the drill nights, anything as such. They used to have games such as shuttlecock, you know, a net. And after the drills, they would play this. They were very keen on that. What's the other one? Like ping pong, you know. They had them, ping pong tables and things like that. And billiards, of course. Not like a social side at night. But there was no PT as such on drill nights. But at camp, we had a drill instructor, and of course he had your vest and short pants. They weren't issued, you just what you had.
What kind of exercises did they do with you in the camp?
Well, just a bit of the usual what you did at school, you know. What does Hanger call it? It's
Swedish drill.
Swedish drill. That's the thing, yeah. Just the usual, you know. Skipping on the spot and all that sort of thing.
Did they give you any gas precautions training before the war started?
Well, gas masks weren't thought about till the war started. We had them. We had them issued. Late 38, we had them issued. But there was never any real gas training till the war started.
And presumably you would have to, it would be part of your uniform then at that time.
Yes, more on the front. That's with the full marching order, of course.
What other clothing did they give you? We talked about the uniform, but for rainy, wet weather, did they give you something to wear?
Ground sheets, mostly. You wore your ground sheets, and that was folded in your pack or your haversack. And great coat for real bad weather. And early on in the war, they had quite a smart great coat come out with a double breast. So prior to that, it was just a single breast great coat. It was a bit less shapely, but it was rather smart. I think that the idea of that was to sort of make up for the ugly battlecross. Because it was just, some fellas were just like a bag of spuds tied in the middle, weren't they?
you basically went to territorial a year, 15 months before the war started.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking back on the training that you were given, would you say that the experience that was to follow, was it good training? Did it prepare you for battle?
I don't think any training prepared you for warfare. But camping out in general, yes. You know, we had tented camps in France.
Where were you, do you recall, when the declaration of war was made on that Sunday morning?
We were in church on the Sunday morning when it was called. It was given out from the pulpit.
This was a church parade?
Yes, church parade. And then, of course, we marched back. We had trenches drilled there, around the drill hall. And chaps were, when the area alarm went, it was went all over the country. And it was only, I don't know what it was, a false alarm, or whether a spotter plane, just came over, more or less appeared foreign sky sort of thing. But it wasn't no big deal, that.
What were your feelings when that announcement was made in the pulpit?
Well,
your own personal feelings?
Well, we weren't worried about it or anything. Didn't worry about it. Didn't worry us. But when we... after it was announced, of course, they said, right, you're finished. Now it's to you, your regular soldiers. And you had a little brass T in the 8th on there. 8th Battalion Territorials. You had to take them out on your shoulder. You took them out and handed them in. And that was about all there was to it. You just carried on as before.
Had you been called a day or two before the outbreak of war, or was it on the 3rd itself?
No, no, Friday night, that was the first. We got, it was given over, radio.
What were you doing at that time? Were you working or what?
No, I wasn't working, no, not at that time.
And you had to report, presumably, to the drill?
Yes. Yes, it turned. Some of them didn't turn up until the next day or so, because they were probably working night shift at the colliery and things like that. And they went in that night instead of turn up the drill hall. And,
presumably you didn't have to tell your employers that you were now called up.
No, because I wasn't working. But it wouldn't make any difference. They would just go, you see.
What was the family response to the outbreak of war and the fact that you were certainly maybe called in, and your brothers, of course?
Oh, well, my elder brothers were... They didn't really. I was excited with the idea of at last, you know, I've got a job, sort of thing.
They didn't tell you about the conditions that they brought in the First World War.
No, they weren't in the First War, my brother. Just the one. Just the very eldest, and I never met him.
So you're quite excited about this.
Yes.
Kind of an adventure.
It was. An elderly chap said, well, you're going on the great adventure. See? And I remember going up to the local post office, same day, and he said, good lad, we're all behind you. And I thought, he was. He was right behind me. He was still in that post office. Walked in all the more.
Did the public view of the territories change when the war started?
Oh, yes. They were all cheering you on, sort of thing.
Prior to the war itself, were you looked upon as kind of weekend soldiers playing at soldiers?
Not really. No. You just accepted as part of the picture. You know, same as the Boy Scouts or anything like that.
At what point had you become medical orderly? Was it before the war started?
No, there wasn't any need for one before the war started.
At this time you were just writing?
Yes. Well, what they did, both battalions at the drill hall, both companies. And this chap I work with down the colliery, he said he was medical orderly. Oh, I said, he says, get yourself medical orderly of the 11th. He was medical orderly for the 8th. And that's how it all started.
Had you had any training in first aid prior to the war?
Oh, yes. Each colliery had its ambulance classes, you see. And I had, I think, three certificates, I think, at that time, St. John's Ambulance. And towards the end of 38, I joined the local St. John's Ambulance Brigade. And not knowing at that time that this brigade was part of the Naval Sick Berth Division. So it came about that for all I was in the army, called up by the territorials, I also got called up by the Navy for to join the Naval Sick Berth, which of course couldn't do both.
And from the ship of the army.
That's right.
So can you tell me the memories of those first days when the war broke out, you were crawling as a full time soldier now?
Right.
And what were they doing with you in those initial days?
Well, initial days, you were overcrowded. And they had to sort of send somebody home. So, what they did, they took over a local dog truck. And we reported to the local dog truck. 9 o'clock in the morning, we were sent home at 5 at night. And the other company occupied the drill hall, the regular company. And until the regular company were moved down south, we just had the dog track. And of course, in those days, all you had was your battle dress. You had no rifles, no equipment, just your battle dress. So it was more or less just road marching. That's all you could do. You couldn't even do drills, not without a rifle. It was quite a while before we got issued with rifles or anything like that.
Where did you sleep at the dog track?
Well, just the guard slept there. You went home.
I didn't sleep in any place. The dream was like the territorial.
More or less, I.
Yeah. At this point, had they split the 8th battalion into 8 and 11?
Oh, yes. Yes.
How did that come about?
Well, what they'd done, they'd had this recruiting march, doubled the TA, and those that had just joined were given battle dress, and they were the 11th. But they were very much in the background sort of thing. It was the chaps with the... And then, chaps that were sent from the 8th to the 11th, because I had a spell in hospital. I'd been ill for 3 months with a peritonitis. And we had to hand our service uniform in to make a second uniform for the 8th. And of course, we just had the battle dress. And for quite a while, till they moved to the next station, down south. And then the drill hall was left empty. And we had a squad in there, cleaning out the drill hall, prior to us taking over. Now that would be just before the winter of 39.
How did you react to be told that you were moving from the 8th to the 11th?
Well, I didn't quite like it at first. Because the battle dress didn't look as good as the service dress. But apart from that, I mean, it was freer going home every night.
Equipment-wise, you you had, as you say, nothing.
Nothing. Nothing you could provide. So,
when did things begin to change? When were you able to take the full time duties of the land and not the same home?
No, when we moved into the drill hall. When the 8th Battalion had moved away down to Shipping Norton, I think it was, down south, we eventually took over the drill hall. And from then on, of course, we had our own cookhouse. You had your equipment issued to you there, your gas capes, all your equipment and things like that.
Which company were you with in the end?
D Company. Oh yes, it was both D Company. And we were in the drill hall till turn Christmas. And
what were you doing whilst you were there? Did you train in Greece?
Oh yes, it was, but they went out, even went out expecting enemy parachutists coming and things like that.
You know, on the field. You were patrolling the area?
They were, not me. I was in the ready room. I dodged a lot of that training.
So at this point, you've gone into the medical room.
That's right.
Was the medical room well organized?
No.
Was the medical room?
Well, it was just a room set aside, that's all. And I made a Red Cross and stuck it on the door. That's about the full limit of it. And we had this big box that I told you about that we'd had at the camp. And that was for any medical equipment I could find. I was a bit like Gunga Dean, anything I could get hold of, sort of thing.
Very little,
yes. Well, they were bought from the local chemist. And then the doctor organised a little bit for you, you know. And he used to, you had chaps on sick parade, and he used to come every day. The medical officer doctor.
Who was it?
Well, he was in the RMC.
Remember his name?
Oh, I don't know. I can't remember his name, but it was a... He looked German. I don't suppose he was, but he was blonde, and, you know, typical blonde German he was, a big chap. And
you say he came every day, at the same time every day?
Roundabout, yes.
What time would that
be? In the morning. And you would get the chaps lined up for the various little ailments. There wasn't very much. You know.
You didn't ever have any malignant people who were coming along trying to get off duties or whatever?
No, not really. We, they didn't, you know, they didn't feel like malignant or anything like that. They were pretty fit blokes and, you know, they wanted to get out. We had football games and things like that at the time, so they didn't want to be malignant and put on medicine and duties and kept in the drill hall. So they didn't malinger because they would have been kept in and not able to get out at night.
What was the usual kind of complaints that they had at this time?
Well, colds or things like that, you know, or foot troubles, off-road marches and things like that. They were just minor complaints, you know, minor injuries.
And you said that you had to, one of your tasks was to examine the thing.
That's right.
How did you deal with things like blisters and soreness?
Oh, well, the usual. We used to dress them, you know, and let the water up properly with a sterile needle sort of thing, you know. And you learned as you went along.
Inoculations? Was the doctor giving inoculations during this period of time?
That wasn't till later. That was just before we went to France, the inoculations. The,
were you the only person in the medical at this time?
Oh, yes.
Just myself.
When we got the injections and things like that before we went, I had to look after them chap, and I had the same injections. So if I had any after effects, it was tough luck.
What duties did you have to perform? Not as medical, did you still have to put in drills and dismantling?
Oh no, you were more or less, I missed a lot of drills because I was in the MI room, see? I was more or less excused all that.
And they would keep records, presumably, of the men who were coming to you.
Oh, yes, I. They would keep records, and they were brought up to see the doctor and things like that. And then he brought me some Winchesters. You know, the usual style, big Winchesters. Flu mixtures and things like that. And you'd give them a dose of that. Or aspirins. There wasn't very much to it.
Did the issues that I had to get in the first World War, a tablet that seemed to was expected to cure everything, which is the number 9 or number 5?
No, they weren't. No, I don't recall anything like that, no. Let's say no.
What time did the medical room open in the morning?
Probably valley getting up. You'll open all times.
So you got up across and rest and wash and so forth, and then you went straight to the medical room, did you?
Yeah.
You didn't have to go anywhere.
I slept in the medical room.
So that was your base?
That was my base. I had a bed in there.
And were you kept busy throughout the whole of the day?
Well, not very much, but, you know, depended. I mean, while they were playing games, someone would fall and hurt himself. There was one chap badly burnt himself on the stove at the end. And you got all sorts of incidents like that. You didn't know when you were going to get them.
If the company went on the roof march, did you have to go along with them?
No.
No,
that's right.
It wasn't a bad job, was it?
It wasn't. As a matter of fact, when eventually you got into the battalion at Sunderland, you were way behind because you hadn't done the drills and things like that. And you know, when everybody's doing drill together and you're a split second behind, you stand out like a sore thumb.
What was the equipment situation? Did it improve over the weeks?
Oh, yes. We'd get rifles at some point. They were heavily greased and wrapped up with grease cloak paper and things like that. And then...
were these 303 rifles?
Yes. The same as during the First War. And you had to have your own numbered rifle. And that you had to look after, sort of thing. And your bolt, this is important, your bolt of your rifle that went in, it was for each individual rifle had the single bolt. See? Now later on, when we were taken prisoner, we threw our bolts away, so the rifle was useless. Because you had to have the special bolt to go in each rifle.
So your rifle had its bolt, which wouldn't fit another rifle?
Well, not accurately, see. They were supposed to be tuned in like a Rolls Royce to each rifle. Not quite accurate. I suppose you could put another one in, but not perfect.
So you're now a full-time soldier, and you're based in the drill hall. Was there much opportunity during that winter to get proper training, adequate training?
Well, in that time we moved away from Holy Spring and we marched to Sunderland. And we went in a school at Sunderland, took over a school on Chester Road. And we had some regulars drafted in with us to more or less give us a lead, how to do guards and all that sort of thing. And we did a lot of training on the seafront at Seaburn and things like that.
Were you patrolling the coastline as well?
Oh no, it was the others were going out doing that. Because I had a proper room, I had the only room with a fire on in this school. It must have been the headmaster's room or the infant's room with a big fire. And I sort of had one sick at least, so I maintained the job, the room. I had a pretty comfy time there in this. And at night time, when after lights out and that, you know, the fire going, we would sit and make toast and pots of tea or cocoa.
Had you been joined by one or two other people in the medical room at this point?
No. And the patients. It was the patients that... I was once put on a charge for having a mouth organ band in the sick bay, because we had a mouth organ band down there, and they came in, and I said, look, you're not supposed to be in here. Oh, well, and I hadn't the authority to throw them out, see. And of course, I was called up before the captain, told, like, any more, and I was going to be punished.
Just a private.
Just a private. No, I was supposed to have what's called a protection stripe. You're not actually any rank, but you have this stripe on as a protection, so that you have a bit of authority. But I never had that.
How long were you at Sunderland?
Well, we were at Sunderland from, let's see. We were at Sunderland from about February until we moved from there to France.
And at this, over this period of time, you still weren't getting much equipment, were you?
Oh no, we were fully equipped by then.
And when you say fully equipped, what did you have?
Well, we had gas equipment, gas cape, gas masks, Bren guns, everything, more or less, that you were allowed to have, ready to sort of move to in the battle.
Did you have carriers?
No. We weren't issued with that. No.
So it was basic rifles, Bren guns.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned gas there. At this point in time, had you had gas precaution training?
Yeah, yes. We did have chaps come through and tell you, you know, you had loads of stuff like little ointments for rubbing your goggles when they missed a dope and things like that. And then we had armbands to wear when you're on sentry duty or whatever. And they detected mustard gas. See, there was a lot of this.
How did that happen? How could an armband detect the gas?
Well, droplets. Mustard gas is droplets. And that would show up on your armband, just looking like that.
And did you have to go through the gas test?
No, we didn't go through anything like that. That was must have been issued later. I mean, we weren't even, as some of the St. John's men in civil defence, given a sniff of something smelt like the gas. We weren't even given that. You know, it was just a chap, he'd been to a gas school, army gas school, one of our lot, and he would come back and train you, tell you what to do.
Did they send you on any courses?
No, I was supposed to go on to Catterick on a foot course, but I didn't go. And as it turned out, they sent a chap from Chesley Street, and I wasn't really medical orderly after that, from when the battalion, but I was right up till we went to France,